I'll Leave You With This with Dustin Chaffin.
Thank you for listening. I'll Leave You With This. Please subscribe to our Patreon page. You can hear all kinds of extras with TJ Miller on the road and Hell Gig stories and behind the scenes of a comedy club in Manhattan. So please support that. I could really use your support. So if you like this podcast, please sign up for Patreon page. It's only like $2 and you can really kind of get some extra stuff that I want to try to add. It's even getting better and better each week. So please support us and I'll give back, I promise. So, last night, I did a gig in Staten Island because I like to brag, and I was here's the deal: I was in front of was outside. Do you do a lot of outside gigs?
Not if I can help it.
Yeah,
there's a roof.
No roof. Yeah. In front of a Skechers, when we drove up, there was a guy. The wind was real bad, so there was a guy trying to like put the makeshift sign up, you know, and it was blowing over.
Always good.
And they had to weight the bottom.
I
was just like, as you're walking towards the gig, this is all that's happening, and it's just like, oh my gosh, it was horrible. And then here's the funny part: this is the second parking lot gig in a month.
Man,
yeah, I did.
Your agent.
Yeah.
You're killing it.
It's like, and then I did the other one was in a it was a golf course parking lot, and then it was a golf thing, and then it was like there was a tree in front of the audience, this huge oak tree. So we literally had to kind of look left to like see the crowd.
Okay.
And it was like, hey. And it's like this little, and then last night was really funny because it started raining. And so the light, and that they had this little, you know, Home Depot light, and then a little shitty Radio Shack 1974 speaker. Then the light just blew out and smoke was everywhere.
Wow.
It was like popped and it was like thing. And then it's Staten Island, so they're half the mafia's there. So they're like, hey, who's this guy? And
it's like, what happened to the light? Hey.
And of course they want to heckle, and then I go crazy when they heckle. I would like the humanity to heckle a person in this situation.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Like I was like my brain was I would just went off. Like you want to be mafia? We had a meatball sandwich. Like shut up, stupid! You're not a mafia. And then, you know those kind of things just going after him. And it was just like I don't know.
How'd they react to that?
It was fun. It was
sure,
fun.
Of course.
Yeah,
they like it.
I'm funnier when I have a meltdown.
No, and they usually actually do like, you know, the name calling.
That's what I realized. I'm starting. That's the sad part of your comedy. You start to look at it, you're like, I'm kind of funny when I lose my mind.
You don't want to be. And if they don't know you've lost it, that's okay.
No, but it's like losing yourself in that. You know what that is.
Oh, hell yeah. Really?
You know, I'm sure this
Believe
is,
me.
You know, you've
you
had.
Set off 80 triggers there in my brain, right?
Yeah.
Now. Well, you know, outside community college on the college circuit, they're 2-year schools, so there's no, they got to be during the day.
Yeah.
And so normally they throw you in the cafeteria in the corner, you know. And the crowd wouldn't know you were there. You're just a dude. Hey, no intro, nothing. You just had to walk over and start talking. Hey, everybody. Are people looking up from books and looking around? You know, but when somebody tried to take a chance because they knew that those were notoriously bad, were nooners anywhere because they're going to put you in the cafeteria. You were never separate in your own little room somewhere 90% of the time. So every now and then somebody would have the right idea, let's put them outside. And so there's just some fountain, and
horrible.
You can see the microphone cord going directly into the speaker. You got about 2 feet of tether to work either way.
Hey,
there's no place for them to sit. They just kind of gather around you in a semicircle.
Hilarious.
And just kind of standing there. And then most of the people don't know what's going on. They're still just milling by every now and then. A head will pop in.
Yeah.
Somebody just want to see what this was. I got to go to chemistry. See somebody working their way through the crowd.
Yeah, no other art form are they doing that. There's not like an opera singer booked at a college bookstore. You know what I mean?
No,
like,
that's true. Well, you know,
there's not a dance team, you know, at the cafeteria. You know, it's like comedy has its own, like.
That was one of, you know, our boy thing. Spanky, you know Spanky.
He did a bookstore.
I still remember this. It was Wright State University, which is in Dayton, Ohio, near the Air Force Base.
Okay.
You got for engineering and aeronautics.
Big school,
it's pretty smart, right?
Yeah.
Except for deciding where we should have the comedy show because they decided instead, welcome week. So they figure, where's the biggest crowd on campus during the first week? In line, outside the bookstore. So they don't have him. Again, it's a 4-year school. They could have put him in a little theater somewhere at night.
Oh, yeah.
8 o'clock, welcome freshmen, welcome back students. Oh, no.
Yeah.
They make him stand in the hallway as the lines move past him to go in the bookstore.
What am I doing with my life?
What
am I doing with my life?
Yeah, you just kind of, it's at one point in your brain, you're just going, 2,200. I can't believe they give me 2,200.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's so, the greatest thing I've ever, like, figured out late in comedy, because I get real, like, anxious about, like, you know, doing the time. Because I remember Mark Maron always, he had a situation where, like, he opened for a guy and, like, he tried to get off and the guy was like, do your time, made him go back up on stage. Oh, it was like a whole thing. So my whole thing is just do my time.
Sure.
As long as I do my time. So I've been like buzzing myself with my phone. So as soon as I do it, the exact amount of time we all agreed on, see you later. That's it. I mean, I won't do a minute over 40. Sure. You see me here. I'll just jump off. As soon as I get the light, see you later.
Right. No.
I ain't going to relish in this laughter. You know?
I was doing a corporate gig and Ray Charles was the performer. Late,
oh, no.
Late in his, yeah. This wow. Was 20 something years ago.
Yeah.
But it's in Ray's contract that Ray plays for an hour.
Yeah.
And the hour is from 10 to 11. So if your thing is behind,
forget
you start
it.
At 10:15, Ray's stopping at 11. You're
only
getting 45. Ray was a stickler about this.
Was he really? Oh, wow.
At every rehearsal, there was going to be like 900 people at this thing.
Oh, wow.
So everybody's rehearsing.
How'd they get Ray Charles? That's crazy.
And they paid him.
It must be like an AT&T kind of thing? Like a big company.
Exactly.
Okay.
And so they, the following year, this is how weird they are. And so they just knew anyway. And they did. They knew to get his ass right on at 10 if they wanted the full hour of Ray.
Yeah.
And they did. So it was great. But now this is how much money they had. The following year, same corporation. They build boxes all over the world. They got dudes got a home on the 35th floor at the Sherry Netherland on Fifth Avenue here in the city overlooking the park.
Oh, wow.
His Atlanta residence where they have a big factory down there is the old Coca-Cola guy's mansion or something. He's got a house in Sydney, Australia. They're Australian. So the next year, they paid Paul Anka, the old school Paul Anka, who wrote My Way for Sinatra.
Okay, yeah.
So they paid him $250,000. Wow. To rewrite the words to My Way to make it a hack parody song about cardboard boxes because that's what they make. And then they had this party and he comes out with the CEO and you fold the flap, you tape the lid, we did it.
That's the amount, though.
That's what I.
That's did. The amount. That's the amount.
What they must have paid Ray.
Yeah,
but Ray
yeah.
just came out and did his show the year before.
Yeah, but that's the amount to do
that's
that
what
to yourself.
It was for Paul Anka.
To
yes,
do that to
absolutely.
Yourself, like to have no dignity left. Like that's
and
it.
They did it together as a duet, and Paul Anka's about 5'2". He's like Tom Cruise.
Ray did the duet with him.
After Paul Anka sings it, he's got to sing it with the dude, and a dude is off on the side actually. Folding a box together, doing what they're singing, right? As they sing the lyrics, a dude's making the box,
no,
right?
No, he's not.
Yes, he is. And the closer, so at the end when they handed it up, Pratt. Well, it's because Pratt Industries is the name of it.
Oh,
so,
my God.
So now, with perfect timing, because Paul Anka, now the CEO of the company, he's like 6'4".
Okay.
Paul Anka, 5'2", right?
Hilarious.
So by now, the box is perfectly folded, and as they're singing the last line, the dude that folds it walks over to Paul Anka, sits in front of him. He stands up on the box, so now he's the same height as the CEO. And they throw their arms around each other and do the big closer like it's karaoke night. At any bar in any neighborhood, I know.
That's hilarious. I thought you were gonna you're gonna put him in the box.
They had one big enough. I'm sure they made that joke. I forgot. I'll never forget. I was hosting both these things.
At least you were hosting. That's the best gig in that situation.
Didn't have to do anything.
Yeah.
Both times, 2 years ago, I just walked out. Ladies and gentlemen, Ray Charles.
Oh wow.
Super easy.
Did you get to talk to Ray at all?
Oh yeah, I got a picture somewhere. Ray was everybody. David Spade was the first guy I met him, and then Ron White met him, and then Eddie Brill met him, and everybody that ever randomly ran across him said he all you had to run over, Ray, picture, and he'd just stop and make the pose. Everybody, he'd tell him who you were, he might talk to you for a minute.
Okay.
I was a comic.
You told him you're a comedian? Oh,
right, kinda, no, I never heard anybody think about Ray.
Yeah. Oh, that's phenomenal. God, my God, that's so funny.
Just to
have that kind of stuff. I don't think I've ever worked with anybody like that. It's like I did one time. I did a thing in Queens. It was like they had like kind of these like four top groups, but it was like they were kind of banged up. There was like one guy left.
Sure, of course. Like, I know, right? I know. I was in
like the Jaybirds, and it was like,
I saw the Spinners.
Yeah,
in Atlanta City. Advertising Atlanta City too. Yeah. I'm like Felipe Wynn's been dead since 19. He was a singer. He sang every lead.
So it'd be like it was five groups, but one cousin
Sure,
and like somebody stepped in and.
Sure.
And it was like, they were great, you know, yeah, as much as they could be. But it was, then I was a comedian. It didn't make sense that I was a comedian. You ever do a gig, you're like, this doesn't make sense. Nobody thought this through.
No. Yeah. Somebody said, get a comic. Yeah. That was it. Bang. They just turned.
It's like, and I can, you know, I can handle myself, but it was still kind of one of those situations. They made me wear a suit and everything, which is fine. But it was just like, it just didn't make sense that I was there.
No, I love then, those. Who thought of this? When you walk right out there and you're like, oh my God. Who thought of this?
Yeah, I did. I did the one. It was like a celebration of like African American academics and stuff. And it was MIT. I believe it was in the Harvard Auditorium or something. It was like all these like huge, like just genius, like people of color. And then they had a comedy show. And then they had like all these black comics, like Artie and Harris Stanton and like Will and Sugar Bear. And then they then they had me.
Okay. And Token Whitey. Gotta have Token Whitey on the show always. Usually that's fun sometimes.
It was fun. It was fun for about 20 minutes.
Okay.
And then about 22 minutes, I happened to do this, you know, at least black people got to travel joke that I used to do. And they just weren't having it. And it was like, just boo, boo, boo. Like a boo I've never heard in my, I've never heard that kind of boo. Yeah, like a sea of boos is a whole nother kind of boo, you know.
Well, I remember, you know, during the Clinton administration, and you know the NACA conferences where after you did your showcase, if you got to perform for them, it's a trade show. So you walk through this hallway, so all these little booths are next to each other. And so just like if it was a hardware convention and this one's faucets and this one's toilets and this one's tools, it's, you know, it's the African-American experience. It's two girls that sing opera. It's a dude that does a tribute to Jimmy Buffett. It's a bunch of comics standing in a booth. Excuse me. And when Clinton was president, I had these jokes, because Clinton was always calling himself the first black president.
Yeah.
Said it all the time. So I had these jokes that went with that. And every now and then I'd feel real sassy and say, well, why didn't you look at Al Gore and go, you my nigga? And I no one ever got mad. And I got away with it.
In Staten Island, that's fine.
Yeah, I got away with it about a year. But at one of these conferences, the African American Experience, which was an agency that brought everyone that was your audience from your story. This is their agents that send them to colleges to do talks about that.
Oh, no.
And it's a brother and a sister.
Yeah.
And the dude's really cool. My agent's right next to him. I got to stand there, you know. Yeah. And so the brother comes over and he goes, all right, I heard that joke. And he goes, I'm telling you right now, as soon as she gets here, she's going to start chewing your ass out. And I'm like, what'd I do? He goes, she hated that. You can't say that. He goes, I think it's hilarious. I go, oh, really? Are you going to back me up on this? No, I'm not going to help you one bit. I'm not going to help you one bit. I don't know what you're going to do. She's going to yell at you. I just stay on that side. I'm like, there's only 8 feet of space to deal with. He goes, I'd put your agent here. You stay over here.
Yeah.
Just stay, you know, but don't argue with her.
He goes,
we get to say, just like I get to say, I think it's funny.
Yeah.
Did you tell her that? I told her that. She still says that she's black and you're not. And you can't say that.
So did you take it? And did you try to finish it?
Oh, yeah. Okay. As she goes by, I just kind of went the other, and she's like, hey, I need that. He already told me. Sorry. Got him down. Hey, what's your name? I'd love to come to Upper Midlothian.
Oh, you just like, you sidetrack and went another way. Good for you.
Once the students come in,
that's great.
There's like a, you know, there's 800 or 900 of milling around.
And they probably didn't care, right?
No, I'm getting gigs because of it. No one ever got mad. Literally, if I did it 1,000 times
in
3 or 4 years, four people got mad. So I ain't taking it out.
See, that's the best way to deal with it is just avoid the person that's going to yell at you.
No, I'm not going
to. Yeah, I try to be like, well, I'm part Native American. This experience, I can share it. Like, I try to do that whole bullshit.
I hit it with the number thing. I'm like, I've gone to campuses. I've gone to corporate events. Now, where they've even, has to be a corporate where they say, go a little crazy if you're going to. And so, literally, from 18 to 75 over a four-year period, I have said this 1,000 times, four people got mad. You're in that club. I hear you. Not saying you're wrong.
Just letting
you know, 996, I had no trouble with it. You're over here on the dick table now.
Yeah.
Good luck to you. And
see, that's all like hosting shitty shows and stuff. Like, you just know how to handle a crowd. You just know how to wrangle a crowd. Yeah. You're so good with like handling a situation that can go crazy. No. You're like, pop, 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 pop. Mm. Okay, that's how it is. Now, there we go. Mm. Okay, all right, tippy waistcoat.
Yeah, bam.
It's like, bam, bam.
You don't get to talk.
Yeah.
You think you do,
but
you
that's
really
the best
don't.
Part. Yeah, that's the best way to deal with it.
Yeah.
It's just like shut them down. That's amazing. But I think that's the thing in comedy. It's like you know, the social aspect is so difficult sometimes of after the show. Like my whole thing is like lately it's like I've had situations where, you know, it's like, and that I don't think people realize that moment is, you know, because we're giving a shit up there. We're giving, to them, it's just a guy just being a jackass.
Right.
But to us, it's not. We sacrificed. We could have had a real life, you know.
Right.
We could have had kids and
a house.
Yeah. A backyard. We could have had all. We're all smart enough to pull that off.
Sure.
We all could have done that. Sure. And then so we're up here in these little shitty places night after night. Yeah. And then so, you know, we give our souls up there and I'm in a parking lot, you know, whatever. And it's like you get off the mic. I can't even say stage. You know, you leave the microphone because there's no stage.
Sometimes.
And so, and it's like, you know, be careful what you say to me. You know, give me a moment. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I just lately, tough crowd drives me crazy. You know, just like, oh, that's tough crowd. Were they? Because I thought I did amazing for what I was given.
Sure.
So they were tough crowd. But is that what you're going to say to me? Not, hey, good job. Hey, whatever. You know what I mean? Like, it just drives me insane.
Yeah, I don't even.
You're better than me. I'm learning.
Yeah, absolutely.
Chuck Berry. Just, you know, get your suitcase and leave.
Bag of money, out the door.
Get your money and just go out the back door.
When the late, great William Stevenson really hated him, you knew he'd hate him, but the crowd wouldn't notice because he'd already have his coat on. He has got one more thing to do and go back and say good night. That's it. One more hand, tip the staff.
Yeah.
If he really hated him, he'd already have his coat on. So he'd be the first one out the door and gone. He's already been paid.
Yeah.
He's cleared his tab.
Yeah.
And you'd have to be like, why has he got his coat on? Like, oh, he hated him tonight.
That's hilarious.
But he hardly ever did that. He had to be really.
Well, even here, like at the comic strip, there's like a back entrance. Like, if you really hate him, you can go underground and just they'll never see you.
Yes.
It's like the Elvis exit.
True.
You can just totally leave.
Yes. I remember one night when Chappelle hadn't been in here in 1,000 years.
Yeah.
And me and Rogel were in here.
Okay.
And the owner kept trying to corner Rogel and tell him show ideas and stuff.
Oh,
and
God.
And so Chappelle, under his breath, looks at me and Greg and goes, man, I wish there was some way out of here. And we both at the same time, like, you don't know about this? And he's like, what? So we brought him in here. He used it to get away from management.
Yeah.
But he was so happy. He's downstairs. He's looking at me and Rogel. We're like, yeah, right through there and straight up. You're on the street. They never knew you were in there.
That's amazing.
He's like, oh my God, how did I not know this?
At that level, it's like, you know, people, all they want to do is, you know, have a piece of you.
Oh, God, well, especially something like that. You're right. But even if you're just regular us, you just never know the weirdness of, you don't know if it's going to be nice, complimentary, they're going to tell you a joke, something horrible. A Klan dude, I had a story in my act about the Klan.
We all do, a long time ago. Clanny. We're all clanny.
Jim Davis, we
talk about what we know.
Jim Davis' family found his, you know, great uncles or something. They're like, we found his uniform in the cedar chest. They called it a uniform.
Got to go out and play.
So Jim Davis
got to suit up.
What it is. He's like, oh, well, I'll know my next visit. They're old.
Oh,
and
he still didn't know.
So he didn't
know.
He thinks they've come across some sort of Civil War memorabilia or something. But he's got to wait a couple of
Sort months. Of, yeah.
The next
sort
home.
Of yes, a Civil War. Depends how you look at it.
But yeah, it's completely right. I'm not even doing it justice. Anyway, same thing. He discovered later that the uniform was not the right word.
Wow.
For, you know, the hood and the whole whatever.
Well, I found out later in life, my late 30s, my grandfather was in the Klan. He was like part of the whole thing. Mason and a Klan's guy, whatever.
Well, the dude came up to me in Texas in San Antonio. You've done that club.
Yeah.
And he slides me a business card. And this is like, you know, 5 years ago. And he goes, y'all, he does is lean into me. So I don't know what he's giving me. But I thought he'd be a cop.
Yeah.
Dude looks like he's about 40, cleaned up, cop build, looks like a cop by himself.
Yeah.
Slides me a card, goes, you know, you don't write clothes to show that. The Klan's, you know. I go, oh, they're a good civic organization. You're going to give me that? And he starts walking away. And the manager kind of intercedes.
Yeah.
And starts taking me back to the green room. And I later pulled, I pulled the card out. And it says, like, you know, Knights of the something, got his name on it.
Wow.
And he's got a stamp on it. Yeah, something Mason-y, something that makes it look like the VFW.
So how much do they pay you?
You know, he's just there. Yeah, right? Come do a gig.
You're like 10 grand.
Now back to outside. Okay, if you're going to say 10
please,
grand.
Please, keep going.
Because Tom Cotter, we were... at a country club about a year ago, and November will be a year ago. Okay, so last November, and they're paying like ten. They're paying an obscene amount of money, and I'm one night, and he's the next night.
Oh, that's great.
Now it's outside though, but they've got a really cool tent set up. The stage is plenty big enough.
Yeah,
you know, it's as big as the stage in this club here, so it's plenty big. Yeah. They got good sound. Everything's going good, and it's super easy. Only got to do like, you know, 30 minutes maximum, maybe. Oh, yeah. And so I stay the next day just because of getting a cheap ticket, and I'm just going to go back and watch Cotter's show.
Yeah.
And then we're going to fly home. We just happen to be taking, just, you know, worked out. And yeah, they're feeding us. They're throwing money. It's great.
That's great.
Now, granted, up right up, you know, 50 yards up this hill is the massive clubhouse of a killer super, maybe the nicest country club in Tampa. Okay. It's the founders of Outback Steaks have started. The old school Tampa country club wouldn't let them in because they're too fancy old money. Uh-huh. So these dudes just white trashed it up and threw a, you know, Gandolfini McMansion. Just did their whole home thing. You know, very ornate, you know, big sweeping staircases. So anyway, so I'm sure in there there's plenty of rooms that you could have had the comedy show in, but
sure.
Wanted out here on the lawn for some reason, outside, whatever. Yeah. But so my night couldn't go easier. Right before Cotter starts on the second night, the power starts messing up, starts glitching.
Oh, no.
So during the old rich people sitting up there complimenting each other and teasing each other about their golf game, starts messing up, right?
Yeah.
So they get maintenance on it. And again, instead of moving the thing inside, we're right inside here.
Yeah.
I'm sure. Oh, no. They roll out a something you would use after Superstorm Sandy generator. Just a bang! It's the size of that piano. It's huge. And they roll it as close to the tent as they can get it. And so it's just beating Cotter to death, his whole act.
And he's all about rhythm, so that's hilarious.
Yeah. And he's only got to do 30. He gets to about 20 and just in half of the middle of the joke, because instead of going to the next night, he's like, "I'm just, somebody could turn off that generator." He just totally snaps.
You put up with no mic.
He sees me in the back. I'm just howling, you know. And the golfers, pro golfers there, and all these business people, they're looking around. I don't see the problem. I can't hear what you're saying. But same thing. You can just go. It was just so. And they really did at least a pause. As soon as it was over, they're like, "We didn't think it was that bad. We wouldn't have tried that." And he's like, "Really? Get me again, Henley, out of here right now."
Oh, that's hilarious.
Get us out of here right now.
And that's like, funny.
Hang on. We got to find the check. So then we all just had to stand at the bar awkwardly.
Yeah, get the check and then complain. That's what I say.
But I'll never forget. It was I lacked because it wasn't me. The night before, I was a 9 out of 10.
That was so funny. See, I was thinking it was the Outback Steak people. They were like on the grid somehow, you know, just shutting it down. That's so funny. Yeah, we'll see. It's, when it's real money, though, it's like one of those things you can be like, But for $250, you're like,
$250, the surprise.
I need the mic to work.
The surprise. You know, I've got the old one about the bullhorn. That's
Please
the
tell me.
One.
What do you got?
Oh, this one goes all the way back to, I'm open micing. I don't even know.
Oh, this is amazing.
I'm in Arizona.
Open mic.
And Spade. Wow. We don't even know how we've got this gig. David Spade is the old veteran.
Yeah.
And so he started at like, you know, he started like 19.
Okay.
And I showed up and I'm 22. I graduated college, was going to get a job, moved out there, meet him. So he's 3 years in.
Okay.
And
that's great.
So he's finagled a gig at Scottsdale Community College. Remember, this all goes Scottsdale. Back to that sometimes the community colleges want you outside.
Sure.
Excuse me. So, which I still love, and true to this day, their mascot, the Fighting Artichokes. No kidding. They did one of those goofy ones.
It's only
a two-year school. I don't even know if they got any teams.
Yeah, nobody cares.
But they're the go chokes.
That's great. I want one of those shirts now.
Me too. Always have. So, Spade, this came through Spade somehow. Mm-hmm. And he tells me, Henley, they're going to give us like a $650 each.
That's huge back then.
When we're making
that's
like,
gigantic.
We've never made
$50. Three years in, gigantic.
For him, he's made a couple.
And you're what, a year?
I'm 8 months. I haven't made $50.
That's
I'm
phenomenal.
Jumping straight to over $500.
Yeah, that's phenomenal.
I think at the time he probably made $250 a couple of times.
Sure,
but nothing like this.
So this is groundbreaking for
we
everybody.
Can't believe it, you know? And so. So it's outside. We get there, and it's the end of the year, and they've bought everything that you can have. Where the sumo suits, where the students can wrestle in the big fat suits. Remember that one, right?
Oh, I want one of those. Yeah,
and
those
then
are
the
great.
Cash machine where it looks like a phone booth.
I did that. Me and Lisa Landry did that. Yeah, we went around like 50 schools doing that.
Yeah.
It was horrible. Yeah.
Right. And the Velcro wall where you jump on, you're in a Velcro suit.
That's what made Letterman.
Yes, exactly. Absolutely. No, right. Absolutely. So they've gone.
That's stupid dog tricks. Yeah.
They've got all of them going on, you know. And they got a band playing.
Yeah.
And so me and Spade walk up. And the band's thrown together a crappy little stage, but it's still a pretty good-sized stage.
Okay.
It's, you know, it's four bites of plywood that they've put on some 2x4s, but it's, you know, it's big, and they got killer sound going, and they're rocking it out, and there might be 30 or 40 kids sitting on the grass and blankets in front of them, you know.
Yeah.
And so me and Spade are standing here, and we're just watching this, and we're like, well, you know. He goes, this has to be where it is. This is the only place, this whole thing. It's big, you know, big rolling, you know, greens out there. And he goes, this is the only place where there's a stage. This is,
yeah.
We have to be here. This is the only place there's sound and a stage. And we're just standing there, you know. So here comes a kid, not too much later, bopping up. He's got this student activity board, little logo on his T-shirt.
Yeah.
And he's much older than us, if not the same age, you know. Yeah, yeah. And he's carrying a bullhorn. He's carrying a emergency services, like, yeah. Everybody out of the building. Out of the building. Bullhorn. Right?
Raging as a machine.
Not a megaphone, a bullhorn. Yes, exactly. Raging. And so he looks at me in Spade. And he still has the little loop thing around his wrist. So okay. We think he might. We don't even know. We're not even paying attention to it. It's around his wrist, and he's just holding it.
Yeah.
And he's like, y'all are the comics, right? And we're like, yeah. We're just standing there, and he goes, oh, first of all, and he reaches in his pocket, and he hands us the check.
Oh.
The envelope. He goes, oh, here's your check.
That's classy.
Get that out of the way.
I like
you know?
That, yeah.
So we look at it, and it's made out to just Spade for $1,300. But mine's in there, too.
Okay, that works.
So we're like, perfect. You know, yeah. He had it all set up anyway.
Sure, sure.
And so he's like, let's get that out of the way. And then, okay, next. It's 1:30. Y'all are supposed to start at 2:00. Yeah. The band's going to 2. Okay. Band's going to 2. So as soon as they leave, first of all, oh, here you go. So then he takes the bullhorn off his wrist and he tries to hand it to Spade, who steps back like you're trying to hand him a pit bull with no, you know, he's immediately backing up, hands up, like, what, huh? Yeah. And he goes, we're not here. We're not here. We're both pointing at the stage and the band. And he goes, oh, no, that's all their stuff. They got another gig tonight.
Oh,
and so as soon as this is over, they're packing all that up and putting it in that van over there, and they're gone. So we want y'all to just take turns. What's he doing? He points at Spade. He goes, what are you doing, Dave? You're going to do like 20. And he looks at me and he goes, you're supposed to do like 10.
Yeah.
And so I figure you go first. You just wander around the campus and do your material through the bullhorn. And then bring it back, maybe meet back here. And then Dave, same thing. Just wander around the crowd. Stop at the various, at the Velcro wall. Stop. Take it, whatever.
Hey,
make it your own.
You guys are stuck. Huh? What's going on?
talking to my mom the other day.
Where are you from?
Exactly. What's the number? So as soon as he walks away, he's like, got to go see you in a second. Yeah. So we got a good half hour, you know, to kill because the band's still playing.
Mm.
And so I'm holding it. I'm sitting there. Because Spade never would touch it. I'm at least holding the bullhorn.
Sure.
And so Spade goes, what are we going to do? I'm like, we're going to the bank and cash that check right now. Bank's still open.
Uh-huh.
That's on a Wells Fargo. There's one right at the end of this street. He goes, oh, I have a Wells Fargo account. I go, we're cashing this now.
Wow.
We're laying this. I snuck over to like the speakers where the band, you know, the back of the so-called lay the thing on the ground behind the stage, and we just scurry off through the crowd. He's a nervous wreck immediately. I'm ecstatic. I'm like, they can't get us. They got nothing. We're cashing. No,
you're from Bama. You're a little spicier.
Well, we've got a one-page contract. We have somewhere in our little bootleg thing that we've gone to a Kinko's and print it up or something because you didn't even have computers then. You got to go to the copy shop. Somehow or another, we've got adequate light, stage, and sound.
Okay.
And they provided none of the a bullhorn and no stage and no sound.
Yeah.
No.
So it's in there. You have it in there.
They're ever coming back on us, and that's all I keep pointing at. They signed it. We signed it.
Yeah.
I'll hold this forever. I bet you the phone ain't going to ring.
Yeah,
it never did. And finally, you know, 2 or 3 days later, he goes, I can't believe they called us. I'm like, they gave us a goddamn bullhorn. If anything, they're in breach, even if they looked at our little four-line contract.
Wow. There you go, young comics. Even at an open, like even at that age or that moment.
Again, who thought of that?
Yeah.
Who said, oh, well, the band, when they leave, they say, oh, well, we can't have a comedy show, then there's no sound. Oh, I saw a bullhorn out in the shed. We use it once a year for a fire drill.
Nobody respects comedy. Just don't.
No, it's the afterthought. It's
It was the afterthought. It's like so funny. Yeah, because last night they had the Home Depot light and everything. And that's all I was doing was having a meltdown on how horrible the situation was.
I was caught up with a generator. Yeah, they were rich. Like he couldn't believe it either. At least he was getting paid. But he was. It didn't jibe with him.
Yeah.
It was very inconsiderate and not thought through.
It's just like, but that's the thing is like people just don't. They don't. I don't know what it is like that goes in people's brain when they think like they want entertainment in a comic. And then it's just like.
They think they're literally the king, and it goes back to medieval times, and they are sitting up there, the audience, very pompously going, "Bring on the fool!"
Yeah, and there's always somebody that'll work for $100.
Yes. So. Yeah, you combine those two things. Sometimes it's a recipe for it's just a cauldron of disaster. It's just, you're right. That's what gets everybody in trouble.
Yeah.
Everybody's worst story ever was just like mine with the bullhorn.
Sure.
Well, I'd never made $650 before. I didn't think I was going to be in a field with a bullhorn. That's what you get.
That's hilarious.
Everybody's bad story. That book that Shiner and Mark Schiff did, I thumbed through it. I Killed Road Stories or something.
Oh, yeah. That was a good one.
Yeah, but
I liked it,
almost 90% of everyone's story in there, somewhere in there, and they were giving me $200 for the first time. I didn't know I was going to be on a tightrope.
Made that money. Yeah. But you've had some, like, you know, amazing moments in comedy. You know, it's like that's the thing, too. It's like, you know, some guys just have that. They just have the rough life.
Oh,
you know?
My God. And like, I've been so lucky.
Beacons and huge theaters. And like amazing tours and work with amazing people and TV shows. Yeah, because you could look at that. You have the balance of okay, I've purchased large adult things through comedy.
Yes. But those guys, any of those guys' favorite things to do for a million years is still to sit around and tell these horrible stories.
Yeah. And sometimes people still complain, I work with people and I was open for TJ Miller and stuff and I work with him and he was trying to complain about the show or something. I go, and I looked at his necklace and said, "You have a car on your chest." He's got this gold rope.
Oh, okay.
I was like, you have like a Dodge on your chest, a new Dodge, a 219.
Right.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, sometimes you can't complain.
Sure,
I am ecstatic and over the moon that we get free food. You know what I mean?
Right.
I get an appetizer and an entree, So it's
Ron White has a little French bulldog, and sometimes they don't let him bring him in the restaurant.
Oh.
That's the thing.
Yeah.
The rest of us are looking at him like, just put him back on the bus one time. Just one time. Just once. No, therapy dog.
Oh, is that what it is?
I have
a whole new bit on that where it's just like, that's what you get. What's all you have to do is go online and get a
print out. Like $300.
Yeah, print out a thing.
And everyone in L.A. is on it.
Yeah.
Everyone in L.A. is on it.
My mom's on. Put a little vest on them, It's just
totally.
Yeah.
Now, did you see the story from a few days ago where the French Bulldog here in New York City?
No, what happened?
Oh, my goodness. This is totally
Please
real.
I love dog stories. Yes.
Okay. This is like three, four, this week, maybe. Maybe Sunday, Monday, I don't know.
Okay.
They live on the sixth floor of a walk-up. The owner's got him. She unhooks him, opens the door. He goes charging through. They can go out on their roof from their apartment.
Yeah.
The back sliding door is open. The two-year-old French Bulldog charges straight through the apartment. It's pitch black at night, runs straight off the building, six floors down, crashes through the sunroof of a parked car, lives.
No.
With a scratch on him.
Really?
Had to get two stitches. There's footage, because now everybody's got phones. There's footage of the owner climbing up on the hood of the car to go through the sunroof to reach down in there, because it ain't her car.
Yeah.
They're just some stranger. She's, and he's just sitting there, glass all over, looking around, stunned. Like, what happened? Six floors through the sunroof.
Well, those things are
lived.
They're built like bricks.
Well, they're just like a bowling ball
or
something.
They're just so dense.
Bang.
Yeah.
You know, and he's just looking around. Winston.
Any other kind of dog, that's done.
So he had, like, on the front leg, they had to shave little scratch on one leg and a little scratch on the back. Nothing. Absolutely nothing. No, so.
That is terrifying.
No, I know.
Wow, that's hilarious.
Anybody that's ever having a bad day, here you go. Here's a little enlightenment. Here's a little joy for you.
Oh, my God, yeah.
No, the lady thinks. She goes all the way. I'm running 6 floors down. I'm going, I'm going to go out here and find my splattered dead dog on the sidewalk. And he's just sitting there looking around like, what happened? Takes him out, hands him to her boyfriend on the sidewalk, who you can see is looking at him. Neither one of them can believe this is just happening. Dog's just sitting there looking around like, all right.
Did I get a treat now?
Yeah, how about that? Boom, I got the boyfriend.
Yeah, there it goes. That's a little better than set, huh?
No one's stopping over. That at the dog park. Not a soul is stopping that.
That's the coolest dog on the planet. You know, it's funny because our friend Nick Novicki, he has one of those dogs.
A French bulldog?
Yeah, and I make fun of him. I go, and then I said, that just goes for my theory. Everybody gets a dog that looks like
them. Sure. Well, that could go for a lot of small dogs. Yeah, that would go across the board. Anything, any low to the ground animal. Be fine.
But they look great together.
Oh, I'm sure
they look
do.
Amazing. Like, it's the perfect Instagram situation.
There was a man in my neighborhood forever, and I'm sure the big dog is no longer with us. But I saw the dude's at least 6'5", 6'6". He's 350.
Mm. Yeah.
And he had a Mastiff, the big bull Mastiff.
Yeah.
Not fixed. So the dog's nuts.
Oh, my God.
Oh, everybody in the neighborhood. We never saw him. And he's carrying grocery bags to pick. If you ever did see him.
Yeah.
We don't ever know where it happened. I don't know.
It's like Shaq taking a shit
exactly
on the sidewalk.
They looked exactly the same, you know. The dude, the big tan dog dude, always had on something tan. Yeah, he's massive. The dog's massive, and the nuts are just straight. Every time you saw him, that's all everybody talked about. You'd be on the sidewalk, just looking at a stranger, and he could walk by and just look at a stranger as New Yorker.
You're just mesmerized by that, like that tick tick thing, you know, that ball. What's it called?
I used to know what that's called.
Acra something.
Oh,
no,
it's somebody's puzzle.
It's not an Acra thing, is it?
I thought it was called somebody's puzzle.
Oh yeah, yeah. Whatever that the swinging ball.
Yeah, the balls.
It's on a desk usually.
Somebody call in with the answer.
We don't Newton, have the phone hooked up, but somebody
Newton's
call in.
Cradle, Einstein's ball sack.
Yeah, we'll put that in post. Right. We'll
clean that up.
We'll add that later. But that's phenomenal.
But you do. I love it when you do. I've always thought that was since I was a kid. First time I heard it, and then the first time I saw someone who looked like their dog, I'm like, this is just wonderful.
Oh, yeah. It's just funny. Ever. And my mom, she's funny because, you know, and also dogs take on, you know, personalities and like insecurities and anxiety and everything. And, you know, my mom can, you know, she can get a little wild and a little, you know, whatever. And the dog is exactly like her. Like, it just just bitches at me and just gives me dirty looks and like wants to start a fight in public.
Of course.
Like, has a drinking problem.
Right.
You know, like,
well, all like, of it. Every bit of it. Right. No. Direct reflection. Sure.
It's like, but it attacks. She gets these little dogs. She's had like four of them, and they're all exactly the same. They all want to just bite you, and like they're crazy. She has some good dogs too, but she has this. The little dogs are the ones that go crazy.
Oh, that was funny. You know, my second ex-wife.
Yeah,
she had the Chihuahua, and he was two years old.
She got Chihuahua. That's what this one is.
But she's. I don't know. As I often said to her when we first started dating, I don't know what you've done to him. But whatever, she has beat any ounce of Chihuahua out of him, I guess, during those first 8 weeks or ever how long.
Sure.
Because he's docile. He didn't bark. I could walk him in Central Park off the leash, come sit, stay. It was like a robot. He was the anti-Chihuahua.
Sure.
And she said when he was just little teeny tiny hamster size almost, but still old enough to get him at 8 weeks, but he's little, you know, he only weighed like 7 pounds. And she goes, anytime he'd start Chihuahua, and it was cute because he's hamster size, and she would pinch the fur behind in the middle of his back and just hold him in the air. Mm. And he would just squirm. He just
nobody likes that.
He tried to run it
nobody
out.
Nobody likes
that. He's trying to get to her, but he can't. He's hamster size. So the all four legs are going 1,000 miles an hour.
Yeah, yeah,
and she's like, you're not going to win this. And she said she would just literally sit there on the couch.
Oh, my God.
She would sit on the couch with the remote, changing channel, and just hold him over the edge
Oh wow!
with her arm. She goes, I go, how long did that take? A couple months.
Oh, wow.
She goes, but this is why he's this white. Well, is it? And because everybody went, this is amazing. I've never seen a chihuahua like this. She goes, well, I almost gave up a couple of times. But that was her so-called, that was her dog whisperer tactic. Just dangle the gerbil.
Who knew? Yeah, the dangling technique.
The dangling of the guinea pig until he stops squirming. Yeah.
It is interesting that just that little nerve behind the animal's neck, like the cats, anything. Yes. Like, it's weird that's when you know that, you know, humans are superior in the sense that we know to grab that spot. I'm sure it doesn't work with a lot of animals.
The mother, a lot of females, pick them up, bite them, and take them.
I'm sure it's a combination of like weird feelings for an animal because they feel like, you know, oh, I'm a kid again, and then like what the fuck, I can't get you. Like, it's got to be this mixed emotion.
I knew there was no way that he had just come that way. I go, what? my first, because it was too not a chihuahua.
So my first, they have a bad rap.
You had to do something.
They have a bad rap.
For a reason, a lot of the time.
Well, it's interesting, like with animals, like I've had good cats.
Oh,
that like act like dogs. Come here and they come to you
all the time.
And you know, have them do tricks, sit down, you know, the things like that. And it's like, it's really just those infant stages, those beginning, like, you know.
John Stewart had a cat that would fetch.
Really?
I'd only heard of that.
Yeah.
And didn't really believe it through college. And I met him here, you know, we were doing a gig somewhere a thousand years ago. And he's got him up first. Also, never seen one on a leash. So I'm waiting to meet him to go into Jersey for some, you know.
Could you be more of a Democrat? Yeah.
Parking lot.
Could you be more of a Democrat with a cat on a leash?
And so, yes. And he comes walking by. And I'm like, really? You know, I'm like, I've never seen you. They would never give you a hunting license where I'm from, or a fishing license. If anyone in the tri-state area, and I don't mean up here, I mean Alabama, Georgia, Mississippi, you would not be able to hunt or fish.
Yeah.
And he's like, what? He goes, he fetches too. And I'm looking at him like, he goes, he takes him off the leash, walks over.
That's hilarious.
Grabs like a piece of a stick or something, throws it down the sidewalk, and the fucker runs. He bout right down, comes back, drops it at John Stewart's feet. He's like, yes. He goes, I've had him like 7 years. It took me forever to teach him how to do this, but he does it.
Wow.
And he goes, now let me get him upstairs and we'll go. And he walks in. I'm like just standing there, just jaw on the sidewalk between the leash and the fetching cat.
He didn't bring him into the restaurant, did he?
He was not allowed to go into the Radio Shack gig convention that we were doing over in some Holiday Inn ballroom, I think is where it actually was.
That's hilarious. Just to get back to how great you are. Now, you're one of those guys that, like, you opened it up for me, and I think a lot of us, I can speak for a lot of the young comics that came through, and you're young too, whatever. We're all, like, about the same. But it's like, but those early developmental years, whether they be when you first started or be when you first kind of figured it out, because a lot of us haven't figured it out yet. And so I think I'm still trying to figure it out, but I realize that, like, you can be from the South. You can be a little rednecky, you can be whatever, but you don't have to try to emulate this thing that you think that is.
No, because
you can be a guy that has a Southern sensibility or whatever, but you could say stuff, you can be smart, you can tell stories. You don't have to be like,
no,
you always say,
pony.
You always say, you don't have to be Enos. Like,
No, right.
You can, you know, you can get up there and talk about politics, you can... You know, if you want to have the accent, if it comes and goes, it doesn't matter. You be yourself and find that thing. And so that was a beautiful thing when I first met you. And probably over at the Gotham, the original Gotham.
That was a good gig.
That's a beautiful club. I love that club.
Yeah.
That's like one of those like CBGB's comedy plays, like a real just a had the soul to it, you know.
Even though
it was Mazzilli who can be a little Armani, it still had an edge to it.
It was very speaky.
Yeah,
even though he was not, yes, the brass was going to be polished. And the wood was going to be, you know.
The bathrooms are immaculate.
Perfect, but
it had an edge to it.
The way
it
was set up, too. Yeah. Kind of small, very intimate.
Yeah, and I like a club like that. But it was like you were very kind to me and, like, you know, that kind of thing in the beginning. And, you know, it's just like you don't forget those things.
We would do the hillbilly shows down there.
That was
with Spanky.
Spanky and I think Rich Brooks.
Rich Brooks,
and I forget who else. Spanky. Spanky some, Rich Brooks. And,
sometimes there'd be somebody in town, or frequently there'd be somebody in town.
Yeah.
Throw up.
I always try to get like a black Southern dude. Yeah. I always felt like that made it a little better, but I can't remember.
There's always a bunch of guys from Texas.
Louis Ramey. I think he's from Atlanta or something.
Absolutely.
I think he was probably on it.
No,
he was probably on
it.
He did
it. Absolutely.
Yeah,
I know
guys
he
like
did
that.
For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that was the thing. It was just like, yeah, but, and that's funny too when you start comedy too, where he's just like, you want to find your niche. You know, he's just like, oh, I just do the Southern thing. Because, you know, because yeah. Blue Collar was so huge. So you're just
right.
like, seeing your head, you're just like, I want to do
yeah,
that.
Yeah, 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 yeah. I know. Believe me.
Yeah, no, and you worked on that, you know, and with all those guys. And so that's the thing, too. Is like you
I
have
mean,
all
took
that
me
history.
7 or 8 years yeah. where I had, I mean, 7 or 8 yeah. years solid. I was not yeah. going to walk on stage and not immediately address why I sound like this, where I'm from, do
yeah.
some jokes about it.
Yeah.
And then for some reason or another, it might have been Clinton. Some reason or another, I started recognizing during City Spots over a few months that I wasn't doing that during this period.
Yeah.
And it wouldn't be till home late at night, kind of sitting back and chilling. I'm like, hey, you know what? I didn't hillbilly it up tonight. I just said, oh, Bill Clinton said this, there, or this. Or maybe I talked about something in the news or something. And,
yeah.
And it was going through a long stretch because I was road all the time, road.
Yeah.
So it came back to being here for maybe a 4 or 5 month period, doing a million sets, not addressing it every time. And all of a sudden one day I go, I don't have to address if I don't want to at all. I can just go this way
yeah,
if I want to.
Yeah.
I can say this. I can
absolutely.
Do this. I can do a mix of it. I can
absolutely.
Go a little bit of everything.
Yeah.
But oh my God. But it was like a 7 year thing. So it was a huge crutch that I didn't realize I was using sort of.
Yeah.
I'm doing well.
Yeah.
I'm
sure.
having fun. I'm making money. It works. It's working in America.
Sure.
It's working here. I'm
Yeah.
But then all of a sudden, it did. All of a sudden it clicked. And I was really happy about it because I'm like, because there's way more freedom. Way more freedom. Now you're not limited in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah, you know, absolutely. You
know,
just
I might
say
during the warm up a little bit because I'm the first person they see.
Sure, sure.
But usually,
sure.
I don't even know, you know. But it was that was a cognizant thing to go. Ooh, you don't have to do this because I was shackling myself for no reason.
Yeah, well, you know, and it's funny too. It's like you know, cowboying up for so long for me. It's like I remember working with you know managers and stuff, and they would one guy particularly. He said, okay, you need to ham it up more, like your accent, like you need to talk more like, and I remember just being like, well, this is how we talk in DFW, you know?
Right. Yeah, exactly.
It's,
man, get worse
it's
right.
like, it's how we talk. We're not in the sticks. I
no.
mean, we kind of, I mean, Kilgore, where I'm originally like born and whatever. Yeah. Maybe a little more, but we moved away from there a long time ago. So it's like, you know, this is Panera Bread accent.
Yeah, yeah,
this is,
right.
this is Chili's and Bennigan's.
Right.
This is strip mall, Texas.
Right.
This is strip mall, Texas.
Right.
This is how we talk.
Right.
And sometimes it'll come out. You give me whiskey, it'll come out. Whatever.
Oh, sure.
You know, but it's like it's funny how people try to push you more into the stereotype,
oh,
and you're just like, nah, dude, this is how I talk. You know.
Yeah. Right.
And but it is funny, and you know, it's like, but yeah, I'm trying to, you know, I'm just going through some phases where. You know, Dwight Yoakam look, and now more Zac Brown Band look, or whatever. So, but on stage though, it's like with this, you know, freshening it up or whatever. I find myself I can't do a certain clothes that I used to do way too much. You know, turning the hat and all that shit. So it's like I find myself, you know, just evolving by not, but not like you said, the crutch, by not holding on.
Yeah,
to
yeah,
that.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's like okay, we get it. You're from Texas, but I can talk about other things.
Yes,
so.
They're going to give us all this stage time in this city, which is
you
have it.
We
have the luxury. A lot of people don't have that.
Oh, they don't. Yeah.
So to not just fully go crazy any way, shape, or form with all these opportunities, you're only going to get better. It's only going to help you.
Yeah. Just
kind of,
you know. Yeah, but I mean, like a guy, you know, like Hannibal Buress or something. It's like you know the fact that he didn't talk about. Just being a black comic or whatever, like that's what launched guys like that.
Oh sure,
Michael Che, guys like that.
Kathleen Madigan in 25 years has no jokes about being a woman.
Yeah,
none.
Exactly.
There's not one who I'm going out with or had my period or this. That.
Yeah.
No, it's just your family. Smart, funny.
Yeah.
Politics, religion has nothing to do. If you read it on a piece of paper, it's completely gender. You'd never know.
Except
it was just funnier. Would be all you'd be enjoying.
It is really funny when you see like Dice like or something, and you're just like, hey, still rocking that look.
Oh sure.
It's like. It's a little grayer, a little less hair, but he's still in it. He's still got the sleeves, still got the gloves.
Of course. Whitney's not going to stop doing Cable Guy. He's a jillionaire. He's
still
sleeveless.
Yeah,
I'm like, come on, Dan.
Put them sleeves on, Nana.
Really? You know, when your daughter Nana. Gets married, we're going to go all the way with
Nana, this. Cover those arms up. Yeah. But so you've done cool stuff, you know, Comedy Central, Letterman, all that stuff. And you did Letterman when it was like, I think it was when he was late night, right?
No, it was still.
Oh, was it 10 o'clock?
Yeah, it was. It was CBS.
Yeah. It was CBS.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Okay. It was after it was here.
Oh, okay.
I was when he moved to the Ed Sullivan Theater. So the first time I did it was 03.
Yeah.
And then I did it. No, I moved. I did it in like 01, 02 maybe.
Okay.
And then I went back in like 05.
Okay.
So I did it twice. That was
and
it.
Then you got your half hour special Comedy Central.
Comedy Central. Got the Live from Lou's Cruises a CD. You can get anywhere.
That's awesome.
On iTunes or Amazon or anywhere you can download it or any of that. And I've got a new one coming out. Hell is Real.
Oh, yeah.
Should be out in a month or so. Same place.
Anyway, Vic Henley in the house, everybody. Yes. That's a long intro, huh?
Yeah, fine.
It takes me a while to get to
hour.
It. Yeah.
It's perfect. There's a billboard on I-71 between Columbus and Cincinnati that says, you know, that says the first five, the three billboards in a row. The first one has the first five of the Ten Commandments, and the next billboard has the last five.
Okay.
And then the run right behind it just Hell is Real.
Hell is Real.
And so anybody's ever been up and down that highway, it's hilarious. I think.
Do you find yourself getting in trouble, like having, like, we, I guess you did get in trouble with the Al Gore joke, but like even kind of dealing with the sensibility of being from the South and stuff like that? Because I'm sure a lot of your audience is like I've noticed, it's like, you know, when they market me sometimes, you know, my audience will be surprised halfway through the show that I'm not what they thought I was going to be. So do you find yourself kind of like trying
after
to...
After all these years, I have so many, you know, I've got so many questions in a checklist. I can bulletproof this, so I'm not going to walk into a situation where I'm going to be shocked or surprised.
Yeah.
And especially in corporate events and colleges and stuff. I don't even do those anymore, really.
Yeah.
The clubs, even, they book so many months down the road, and unless it's a brand new club you've never been to before, you can do enough research, you can find another comic that went there, how they got the money, how they treat you, da 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 da.
Okay.
And so there's just enough troubleshooting. It's hard to surprise me.
Yeah.
After all these years,
like you can adapt.
I'm gonna vet it till it's. You know, not vettable.
You're the comedy predator. Yeah.
Yeah,
you
yeah,
can
it's
adapt.
Not gonna matter. But you know, I haven't got the funniest thing that I got in trouble for, and I was just telling this the other day, is 10 years ago or so, maybe 15, Ted Alexandro and a friend of his, great comic, did a short film. It's about 11 minutes long, maybe 12 maximum.
Yeah.
And it's spoofing. It's done in the American Masters PBS Ken Burns style.
Oh, that's great.
Documentary. And it's about the first interracial ventriloquist team. So Ted's the white ventriloquist.
Louis Black's in that, right?
And,
No,
Norton? There's another one.
Oh, that's what I'm thinking of.
They were the first dirty duo.
Okay.
That's a great one.
Yeah, that's
also another one. Judy Gold, Eddie Burley.
Yeah, okay,
that's another one with Jim Norton and Louis Black. I forgot what that's called, but they're also spoofing.
That
it's like the 20s. It's like
first...
vaudeville.
Yeah.
And they're the first dudes to be completely triple X rated. And it ain't working.
Yeah.
No. Mine is about their ventriloquist team.
Okay.
And so he's found a little black puppet.
No. Here it goes.
And Sherrod is the voice of the puppet.
Hilarious.
Sherrod Smallcombe.
Perfect casting.
But again, it's all this. It looks like the archival footage. It's just black and white. They've got a narrator.
That's great.
It's just so well done that it looks, you know, really real. And so William's on it. I'm in it. Kyle Grooms is in it, playing like the African American studies guy with the bow tie and the glasses.
Perfect.
Talking about the United Snakes of America.
Perfect.
You know,
I got to check this out.
It's wonderful. It's called Horace and Huey.
Horace and Huey.
It's on Facebook.
Right.
You can
find
it. It's only
11
minutes. It's wonderful.
Perfect.
So I play the grandson of the greatest Klan ventriloquist of all time, who started with Horace and Huey.
Once again, perfect casting.
Back in the 50s, right. There's no script. We're ad-libbing this whole
thing. In New York, you're the guy.
So all you got to do, right. So all you got to do is they're all talking about how great the guy is and how innovative this was and whatever happened to him, no one knows. He just stopped talking one day. The act went away, you know.
Yeah.
And then every now and then they click to me, and I'm like, overrated. So my whole job is just to shoot the whole thing down and look like a complete hillbilly redneck, right? And it
was you do that at the bar a lot, so that's perfect.
You know,
we get cocky at the bar.
So it was so funny. And so, you know, I hate everything. I usually tell people I can't act, and I don't like doing little weird projects. I told everybody, go watch this. It's really funny. I'm really proud
of
it.
It's great.
It's very funny.
Yeah.
So, hell, after 10 years at least, I was booked to do a cancer hospital benefit in Savannah, Georgia.
Oh, yeah.
And the,
great
the,
town.
The reason I got it was I had done one up in Maine. Okay. And somehow or another, a lot of the cancer hospital people, they know each other and that. So they've recommended me, another friend, two of us. She's a comic. She's from Georgia. We're going to go down here and do this thing. Well, you know, I got a contract and everything. But a month beforehand, the administrator, not a doctor or anything, the business person that runs the hospital, she sees this online and thinks it's real.
Oh, thinks it's completely real.
Falls for it, hook, line, and sinker. Thinks I'm real clan. Thinks it's all horrible. She's in the big conference room of the hospital, like you would see in any business, whatever the business is. She's in a big conference room with the 13 people around the table, and they're going, hey, it's not real. You're looking, how did you get this job? And her name was Phoenicia Miracle.
Oh, no.
White woman.
What? No.
Yes.
No.
And Phoenicia Miracle was with, so the whole board, she's like, we can't, so they took the hospital, she wrote it all the way to the ground. We still did the show. Yeah. We sold out 750 seats in the theater. All the money went to the cancer charity. Yeah. But none of the things had the hospital's logo on it. It went from being presented by them to just being presented by the cancer charity because Phoenicia Miracle saw that little spoof. So that's the weirdest one ever.
I mean, that's why, like, Blair, she's the reason Blair Witch was so successful. People like that. The reason.
Slenderman.
Yeah. She keeps that genre moving. That genre will always be successful. Well, thanks so much, man, for doing this. It's always great to see you, man.
You know,
it's always fun. And,
you know, it went great when it, just, well, when it seemed like 20 minutes.
Yeah,
an hour.
It's fantastic.
Totally
fantastic.
It.
And how can we find you out there?
VicHenley.com or at Vic Henley on Twitter or at Vic Henley on Instagram.
That's right. Very cool. So. And it's hard to get a hold of you sometimes. I remember you didn't have a cell phone for a long time.
2007. Yeah. I still remember. 2007.
I had a text Tommy. I go, do you have Henley's number? Because last time I had his home number.
Yeah,
I'm not calling nobody's house anymore.
I had a landline. Yeah.
Calling a landline. So I was happy I got a hold of you. It was a whole thing. It took about 4 hours to get a hold of you.
Now. You're in my phone.
Very cool. So thank you for listening. I'll leave you with this and keep being funny, guys. Yeah.